Good morning and welcome to Thursday. It's December 17th, 2015, and it's time for the Education Town Hall here on We Act Radio. We're coming to you live from the heart of historic Anacostia here in Southeast Ward 8, Washington, D.C., down the street from the Big Chair. Oh boy, it's a rainy, dreary day, but nonetheless, we are here. First, I want to begin by thanking the creator for this day and the opportunity to present to you the latest installment of the Education Town Hall. This is your humble servant and host, Thomas Byrd. But before getting started with the show, I want to first thank those who have supported this show financially. I want to thank DC Voice, the 21st Century School Fund, the Senior High Alliance of Parents, Principals, and Educators, also known as SHAPE, the Washington Section of the National Council of Negro Women, the Ward 5 Council on Education. I want to thank Deborah Robinson, and I want to thank all the anonymous donors who have contributed to this show. And I want to thank our major sponsor, the Washington Teachers Union, under the leadership of Elizabeth Liz Davis. So folks, if you or your organization believes that this is an important platform to give everyone access to the public square, then help us ensure that it remains available by offering your financial support. So please contact me at thomas.byrd@yahoo.com. That's thomas.byrd@yahoo.com. We would greatly appreciate your support. All right. I think we're going to have a great show in store for you today, as I always say. We're going to be joined first up, the first segment by Janelle Duderman, and I hope I'm not messing her name up. She's with the New York State Allies for Public Education. And later on in the show, we'll have Denisha, who will be joining us, and another guest. So, folks, I'm glad you're here with us today. I'm glad because you had options and you chose to tune into us, so I'm certainly appreciative. And before we get started with the show, I want to swing over to my partner, my friend, none other than our feature reporter, Virginia Spatz. Good morning, Virginia, and take it away.
Town. Pearson better watch out. It better not cry. Don't even pout. I'm telling you why. Santa ain't coming to your town. Our last feature report on Pearson, the giant education corporation based in England, was in August. At that time, Pearson had just announced large changes to its holdings, selling off the Financial Times newspaper and its share in The Economist magazine, expecting to dedicate the $2 billion in cash from these sales to its education business. So it's about time for an update. And those Santa lyrics were offered by Alan Singer, a social studies educator at Hofstra University, who published a year-end Pearson review at Huffington Post. Singer's lyrics go on to mention Pearson being naughty and concludes with "it's all about price." The narrative summarizes some of Pearson's international troubles, including an open letter signed earlier this year by educators around the world. The letter criticized Pearson for its attempt to make education a commodity to be bought and sold, calling this a serious threat to democracy that will ultimately increase segregation and marginalization. Singer's piece with the open letter is linked from our website, educationtownhall.org. Meanwhile, in the UK, financial reports vary somewhat, but focus on Pearson's troubles in the US education market. Christopher Williams at the Telegraph newspaper wrote last week, "If things get much worse in the US for Pearson, the financial pressures could start to tell." The article goes on to say, "Nobody expects Pearson to be able to control the U.S. economy, obviously. The problem is that the company has repeatedly underestimated the impact on its business, doing heavy damage to a reputation for consistency and predictability won over many years." The article proceeds with a discussion of Pearson's role in testing associated with the Common Core, which the Telegraph calls the closest thing the U.S. has to a national curriculum. It goes on to note political backlash in the current presidential election continuing. The controversy has cost Pearson in financial and reputational terms. Ohio and Texas have canceled Common Core testing contracts worth £100 million. More could follow, and there is little prospect of the system gaining popularity soon. The Telegraph also notes that Pearson's balance sheet improved with its huge restructuring sales this year, but concludes that the CEO badly needs to ensure Pearson passes some of the tests it has for too long been failing. The Guardian newspaper, on the other hand, notes that those large sales left Pearson in a better position as it enters 2016. Their analysis suggests that the company should further refocus its efforts and perhaps become a private entity. One analyst suggests that Pearson should consider exiting businesses which, irrespective of performance, are unlikely to benefit for many years from the future adoption of technology. Possible examples include the operation of physical schools, elementary and middle school courseware, the first 7 or 8 grades of formal schooling, and possibly testing and assessment. Let's take a moment to digest that piece of financial advice. Physical schools, Pearson has 7 Nexus Academies in the U.S., as well as elementary and middle grade courseware are, quote, unlikely to benefit for many years from future adoption of technology. Testing and assessment might also fall in this category. So the recommendation for Pearson's financial success is to exit. There is no corresponding recommendation for students or parents or school districts, of course. Pearson is in business, and educational products can be dropped like hot potatoes when they cease to be profitable. 2016 will be an interesting year for Pearson and education politics in the U.S. Returning to Alan Singer's seasonal song, Pearson better watch out, it better not cry, don't even pout, I'm telling you why. Santa ain't coming to your town. Learn more on our website, educationtownhall.org. This is Virginia Spatz reporting for the Education Town Hall on WEACT Radio, powered by Ethical Electric.
All right. Thank you so much, Virginia, for that feature report and with that Christmas spin. Also, I like that. That was nice. Folks, the other guest I mentioned at the top is none other than Mara Kilfoyle, who's the general manager of BATS.
Marla will be on the second segment.
That's what I said. Okay. The other guest I mentioned at the top that will be joining Denisha is Marla Kilfoy, the general manager of BATS. Because this is Bust Thursdays, folks. Bust Thursday. Badass Teachers Association, United Opt Out, Save Our Schools, BUS, Bust Thursday. All righty. And so now we're going to bring on our first guest. As I mentioned earlier, her name is Janelle Duderman, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Hi, it's Jeanette.
You know what? I see a correction here. Jeanette Duderman. And she is a Nassau County, Long Island parent of 2 children, ages 11 and 8, a parent advocate, and founder of Long Island Opt Out. Is that all correct?
That is correct, except my kids are 9 and 12 now.
Okay, fantastic, fantastic. So your organization, New York State Allies for Public Education, according to your website, you are concerned community members who firmly believe in the power of public education and its fundamental link to the success of a thriving community and democratic government.
That's right.
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit more about your organization.
We're a grassroots group, and we started with opt-out leaders from around New York State that we had all been sort of informally working together. And a few years ago, when the opt-out movement started picking up steam in New York, we decided that it was really important for us to coordinate a little better and a little more formally. So we got together and we said, you know, we're not a nonprofit, but we operate similarly, just in the sense that we're very organized and we definitely have a structure to us. And We just coordinate activities throughout the entire state. We have people in all corners of New York, from downstate to upstate, that coordinate actions. And we work, you know, with the Board of Regents. We work, try to affect change in state ed with our legislators. We pretty much have now an influence on every aspect of education in New York State.
Wow, that's wonderful. To date, I had not heard of your organization, and I'm glad to know that you all exist and that you're doing the work that you do. You say you're not a nonprofit, so how do you all fund yourselves?
We don't. We just operate on with our own, you know, wherewithal, and we just, we don't have funding, so we aren't able to, produce any kind of money of any kind to do any large-scale operations, but, it's all a volunteer basis. We represent over 50 education organizations, everything from other grassroots groups to unions, to anybody who wants to sign on as an ally. And we put out press releases. We have action alerts. We'll do something, online where people can click and generate thousands of emails to local legislators. We have meetings and conferences. And so we do all this basically as a volunteer.
So I know it sounds like you're kind of a consortium of groups and individuals. And,
yeah.
And we do some of those things here in the District of Columbia. And usually what we have to do is all organizations have their own priorities, and so we try to find common priorities. Is that the same landscape that you're working in within up there in New York?
Yeah, generally. And, we find, even though every organization, of course, has different things that they focus on, we really all have the same premise of saving public education, protecting public education, decreasing the standardized testing, delinking standardized testing from being used in teacher evaluations. Basically, our number one priority, especially with us, we are mostly a parent-led group, although we do have educators as part of our steering committee. This started primarily as a parent-led group. We, our kids are our first priority. So everything else kind of comes after that, but it just so happens when it comes to educators, as we all know, something that you do to hurt an educator or a teacher, you're also harming the child that the teacher is responsible for. You can't really untie one from the other. So we feel like the protection of teachers goes right along with the protection of our kids.
All right, I want to let Virginia jump in here before I go to discussing strategies to fight ESEA. Virginia?
Yes, hi. This is Virginia Spatz, a feature reporter, and I just wanted to mention briefly that Lisa Rudley, who was originally announced as being on the show this morning, was unfortunately had to drop out, and we thank you for being able to fill in for her. And I also wanted to note that when she was on the show back in April, she did talk a little bit about NYSAPE and strategies of that had to do with what was then still called ESEA. So now I guess Thomas wants to switch over to talking about the new legislation. Is that where we're going now?
Yes. Because that's what really the premise of this show is about, to talk, to highlight local efforts to fight the new legislation. In fact, now I think they're no longer calling No Child Left Behind. Now it's every child will succeed. I believe, is that
Every Student Succeeds Act. So the initials changed from ESEA to ESSA.
Every Student
Succeeds Act.
Okay.
So ESSA.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Fantastic. I can't keep up with but anyway, so I assume, Jeanette, and I hope you don't mind me calling you Jeanette, that you and your organization have been following what's been going on Capitol Hill with regard to the reauthorization of that act. And so give me your general thoughts about where you your impressions of what they've achieved with this act.
Yeah, the way we looked at it is we knew it wasn't going to be a huge improvement over No Child Left Behind. What we did see, if we're looking, desperately looking for any bright spots, it would be that a lot of the onus has been shifted to the states You know, because in New York, as we've been fighting against high-stakes testing and teacher evaluation systems and all this, the excuse was always told to us, there's nothing we can do. This is coming from the federal government. And so that was the excuse constantly when we tried to shift away from these policies, was it was the federal government, sorry, the federal government, sorry. So now what we're looking at, you know, we're hoping that as this shift takes place, although there's a lot of things that we're very, you know, that we're not thrilled about with this new legislation, because again, it would have been nice if it really solved a lot of our problems, and of course it did not. But we're hoping that through this we can, and we're already seeing it in New York. Things are happening very, very quickly here in New York over the last even week. There's been some dramatic shifts. But what we do hope is that the excuses are now dropped and now our advocacy efforts in New York can take root a little better, and we can start sort of moving away from what, you know, the past policies were and all these strings that were attached through Race to the Top and through some of these the legislation that kept us tied to some of these things. And again, so the excuses are hopefully going to drop away.
So let's start with one of the aspects of this new act. They're letting states develop accountability systems, so there has to still have to be accountability. So what is your organization thinking with regard to where New York State will go with this newfound freedom to develop their own accountability systems?
Right. So New York, this has been the latest. This past week has been huge because we had our governor, Governor Cuomo, had shifted in the wrong direction last January. And during his State of the State announced that he is going to push for, you know, more accountability and more student performance within the accountability system. So we went from a 20% and 40% local test, state test matrix. He pushed it up to 50% is based on state test scores, 50% of the teacher evaluation.
Continue.
Well, what that did was ratchet up the already excessive test prep that was happening in our schools, which is part of the reason why we really got into this fight, that we were seeing that it was really taking over our classrooms. We were losing science and social studies to ELA and math only, especially in the younger grades. And the focus of our curriculum was really completely shifted away from a child-centered type curriculum into a test prep, drill kill, you know, ELA math, get these scores up, because now they're evaluation. And he also put in things about teachers, 2 years they were ineffective, they would be fired, tenure would no longer apply. So there was a lot of things shifting last January, and it passed by law with our budget in the spring. So now that the federal government has now changed their stance on this, again, that's when you say, okay, the excuses, because there was a lot of backlash, and it was, well, federal government makes us, you know, hold teachers accountable with test scores. Now that that's no longer there, over the past week, the governor had put together and we also had 240,000 parents opt out of the state assessments last spring. So 250,000 parents refused to let their kids take the test. Mm-hmm. Because of that, there was so much backlash against the governor and the legislators that they now, this past fall, there's been a sort of stumbling over each other to try to correct this so that they can win back now we're going into an election year here with our Senate and Assembly in New York, and they are stumbling over themselves to try to fix this so that they can salvage their political career.
So that now that they're stumbling on themselves to kind to curry favor in terms of votes for the electoral season, what have you heard of any proposals that may be coming from the governor or
yes.
other legislators?
So 2 days ago, he put together a task force. This task force came out with their recommendations last week, and the recommendations were all in our favor to de-link state test scores from the evaluation system, to get rid of Common Core, or at least do a full review of the standards, take the name off. You know, we will be switching to something like New York State Standards, which what that does is then allow us to make those changes standard by standard without the sort of the, you know, tie-in to Common Core and the copyright and not being able to adjust any standard we like. So now what the governor has sort of green-lighted is taking state test scores out of the evaluation system. That was 50%. Now our Board of Regents just voted to, they voted to put this moratorium on the state test scores. The problem is that we are still tied 50% by law to student performance measures, so now it's switching from state tests to local assessments. So they're switching from one test to another. So yes, it's great because state tests were the most egregious of the tests. They were totally inappropriate. They're 9 hours long. Our kids still have to sit for them, or at least the schools have to administer them. We will continue to opt out of those, but those scores at least will not be part of our teachers' evaluation.
So they get around the law by switching it from state to local assessments?
Yes. Yes.
But didn't the law state that it was, I'm a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, I know that. So the news today, actually an article just came out today where, you know, where some of the reporters are now saying, wait a minute, legally, how can the Board of Regents pass this moratorium if this is law? So now there's questions coming up. But the issue is, even if it is illegal, which I feel it is, many feel it, in fact, is illegal, but who is going to go after the Board of Regents, since the governor and the legislature, they all want this. And the governor would like this to happen without changing the law. We are pushing to have the law change. So we are not accepting this as a solution. We are saying this has to change by law. We want that law repealed, the one they put in place in the spring. It has to be repealed.
It seems to me that would be the appropriate remedy.
Of course.
Maybe I'm just a dumb country boy, so I don't know. But Virginia, your thoughts.
Well, I wanted to just ask about the logistical practicality here. Does this mean that students will either be sitting for or opting out of more than 9 hours of testing, the state and the local tests now?
We already gave local assessments, so not only do we have the state test, we also have the local test, but the local component used to make up only 20%.
I see, okay.
And the state tests were the other 20%. Now, we were in a transition year where this year it was supposed to go up to 50% state tests and no locals. So now, instead, but our districts hadn't even passed that, you know, gotten in to renegotiate their APPR plans, because we were going through waivers and all these, you know, but this was the year that was supposed to shift.
I see. Okay.
So now that's kind of on hold. Like, you know, it's amazing. You talk to one person or another, they don't even, you know, I don't know who's running the show up there, but it's become a bit of a mess where no one's quite sure how this is going to happen. What about the districts that already did pass their new plans? Now they have to go back and renegotiate. What happened, some districts, like my district, we had no local assessment. We used a state test score average as our local component, so we have no other test. So what will they put in for us? Will we have to add another test? We're not sure yet. So there's a lot of things to work out right now, but we are still acting like we were before, pushing full steam ahead on opting out, because regardless of this law or the moratorium, our children still have to sit for a 9 hour to 18 hours for special education students who get double time, you know, 6 day long test.
Wow. Listen, Denisha, if you're listening, if you want to call in at 202-889-9797 and join this conversation, or anyone else for that matter, 202-889-9797. But I wanted to, before I let Virginia, cause we're running out of time, get back in here. Sounds to me, if I understand all this correctly, the assessment still counts for 50% of a teacher's evaluation?
Student performance measure still counts 50%. So now it's, okay, so what will the student performance measure be? And again, we're talking about an assessment. So each district has a different formulation for their local measure. So for some districts, it'll be the NWEA. That's another standardized computer test. for some districts, they give the STAR assessment. Some districts give AIMSWeb. These are all, again, like computerized competency type, you know, assessments on the computer. So, you know, for it, that's why it's a mess, because for every district, their local component was locally created and chosen. So everybody's different.
Okay. Virginia?
I wanted to ask about the Title I implications of this whole situation. One of the things, if I understand right, has always been that if too many students opt out, or if for some reason the school district is not offering tests that the federal government likes, then they can lose some of their or all of their Title I funding. How is New York dealing with that, or is that an issue?
We have some districts that are going on 4 years of having less than 95%, and those districts haven't even had so much to slap on the wrist. Because you're talking about a parent boycott, the tests are still being offered. They're still being administered. They're still being put in front of the kids. We are saying our child will not take it, or even the child sometimes says, sorry, my mom says I'm not allowed to take this. So now in those situations, that's when our state, you know, our state government said to the feds this year, quarter of a million kids didn't take this test, and all these districts did not meet the 95%. What do you want us to do, or what are you going to do? And the federal government was like, we're not touching this. We don't to do with it. Because really, do you want to come in and then punish an already struggling school for a parent boycott? And parents are boycotting not to, you know, be rabble-rousers. We're boycotting to protect our children. So do they really want to come in and have that kind of media nightmare on their hands? You know, I say go for it then. You're sure.
Nah,
bring it on.
No, nah, there's no way. There's no way they would do that. There's no way.
So, you know, we've called their bluff for the past 4 years, and that's basically what's been going on.
I think, do we have a caller?
Yes. Hi, it's Denisha.
Hey, Denisha. I thought I heard the phone ring. Welcome to Bus Thursday. We've got a couple of minutes, so I wanted to give you an opportunity to weigh in on this particular segment.
Yeah, I think I want to thank Jeanette for filling in today and really highlighting what the frustration here is with EESSA. Everyone thinks, oh, it's a win, it's a win, it's the state. It's just a way to shift the responsibility of the testing so that you can get away with doing what you say you want to do less of. So I think it's a real clear example that the federal government knows there's too much testing going on, so let's let the states handle it. But it doesn't mean the states will back off from the testing. It doesn't mean they'll back off from using testing to evaluate teachers. And that's why we say we need to keep the pressure on individual states to kind of make sure that this happens and that we just don't get excited. Yes, No Child Left Behind is gone, and that's a good thing. But ESSA is not necessarily what we've been fighting for. So how can we make it what we're fighting for is where we're at right now.
All right, Jeanette, we got about 1 minute left in this segment. So I want you to tie this all together for us.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, like Denisha was saying, you know, now I feel like now is the time for these state organizations and grassroots groups that are fighting and opting out and increasing awareness. Now more than ever, it's so important for that to happen. Like I said, in New York, this couldn't be the door opening we were looking for because we already have such a strong movement against this. So now other states, again, can also really ramp up their fighting back against this because, you know, as the blame shifts from one, you know, from federal government to the state government, now we can. We do have a tremendous amount of influence on our state lawmakers, and that pressure needs to be applied really as much as possible in each of these states so that we can now, you know, take that and do something with it and get that pressure to affect each individual state and what they're doing.
All righty. Jeanette, thank you so much for joining us here on the Education Town Hall. Consider yourself a friend of the show. We welcome you and your organization back anytime you want to come to join us to share updates or what you're working on. Folks, we've been talking to Jeanette Duderman, who's a parent advocate, has two children in school, and she's also the founder of the Long Island Opt Out. Thank you so much, Jeanette. Come back anytime.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, Denisha, you stand by. And, folks, we're glad you're with us. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I guarantee you if you stay with us, we're going to have Denisha Jones and Marla Kilfoyle, and we're going to continue this conversation. See you on the other side. Thank you.
name is Jamira Bullock, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is Wallace Bright, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is Victoria Harper, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is James Hill, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
We've been talking with our peers across the District of Columbia, and we discovered that a lot of them are talking about how they believe that we are not being provided the high-quality education that we know we need and quite frankly deserve.
They are talking about students in other jurisdictions who are, for the most part, learning and being supported in modern facilities and have access to 21st century technology.
We're hearing them say that there are actually three public school systems in the district, DCPS West, DCPS East of the River, and public charter schools.
They are saying things like, we have been subjected to too many experimental models, unproven educational fads, and countless changes in philosophy and direction.
Some students are talking about how they feel that some of those in charge of our education system talk the good talk about reform and use all the other buzzwords, but at the end of the day, don't really give a damn about academic achievement for all.
Worst of all, everyone is talking about how we don't even have any voice in the public discourse around the direction of our education system.
Until now, because we all listen and share our views on the education town hall, we are thankful that the host, Thomas Bird, believes that we should have access as well as a megaphone to talk back to the powers that be in the district and in halls of Congress. Join Thomas Bird every Thursday at 11 a.m. for the education town hall, 1480 a.m. Listen live online at weacradio.com.
I'm a third grade teacher.
I'm a school bus driver.
I am a parent.
I am a teacher's aide. And I agree to be identified
as a caring adult who pledges to help bullied students.
I will listen carefully to all students who seek my help
and act on their behalf
to put an immediate stop to bullying.
I will work with other caring adults to create a safe
learning environment for all the students in my school.
In my school.
In my school.
In my school.
I'm Dennis Van Roekel, president of the National Education Association. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students. One caring adult can make all the difference. Be that adult and take the pledge at nea.org/bullyfree. Adults have the power to stop bullying in our schools.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
Bully free. It starts with me.
Visit nea.org/bullyfree. A message from the National Education Association.
Hi, I'm Denise Rolark Barnes, publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper, and you've asked whether I think a show on education is a good idea for the District of Columbia. And I would give an unequivocal yes, it is. Information is power. We always know that. But information about education, resources, the politics, the finances, the what our young people could and should be achieving and what should be taught in the classroom is an exceptional. You can't talk enough about it. Let me just say that. And I'm so glad that you are having the show. Continue to do the good work that you're doing, and folks out there, you just keep listening. If there's something you don't hear on the show, I'm sure that the folks here would love to hear from you, and make sure it's a topic for an upcoming show. So keep on listening.
All right, now back live. Thank you so much for being here with us today on the Education Town Hall on WEAC Radio. This is your humble servant and host, Thomas Bird, and it is indeed Bus Thursday, folks. One of my favorite weeks of the month, Bus Thursday. Badass teachers, United Opt Out, Save Our Schools. BUS, folks, you always should join us on Bus Thursday because it's going to be a treat, I guarantee you. And this is the final show of 2015, both the bus show as well as the Education Town Hall, so I think we're rolling along pretty good. So now joining us, returning is Denisha Jones, and now joining us is Marla Kilfoyle, who is the general manager of the Badass Teachers Association. Good morning, Marla.
Good morning, Thomas. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you know I love you. I just love you to death, and Denisha knows I love her too. So I'm like this. I'm in heaven. So we were. Beginning our conversation, we started to talk about the new legislation, Every Student Achieves Act. So, what is Batt's position with regard to the legislation. Well, you know, what do you think about the legislation? Then we'll get into specific positions.
Well, we took a very, very firm position on it. You know, it's not good. We definitely feel there's a lot of things that exist in this legislation. And I'll just kind of round it about. The sad part of it is that actually Batt and AFT Research has, we are actually in this legislation. We're in the Title II in Section 2301N, where we actually fought for legislation to assess teacher workplace environment. So that's the sad part. We're actually in this legislation.
What you all were advocating for is actually in the legislation. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yep. We actually, we have a steering committee called our Quality of Work Life Steering Committee. And actually what we have in this bill is, through Title II funds, having districts look at workplace conditions for teachers. We're actually in this bill. We fought for that. It's the Booker Bennett Amendment, which made it in, which is sad because there's way too much in this act that we don't support. It's very charter friendly. It requires testing of our children every single year, which we don't support. It also requires over testing of our ESL children, our English as a second language. It put a 1% cap on the amount of special education children, that you can test yearly. You know, it's a big testing bill. The only really good thing we like about it is that it throws, you know, the fight to the state level, and we can, you know, we can zero in and fight at the state level if we need to. The other thing is it's very concerning in the bill is the fact that it has an immense amount of language that's geared towards online learning. And that's very, very problematic for us because we definitely know that there's a lot of money to be made in online learning. And we see this as phasing out the classroom teacher and phasing in the teacher being more a facilitator with kids sitting in front of the computer all day long.
So let me be clear on that. You're saying that they're actually trying to encourage more online learning?
That's kind of what we feel at this point. You know, we feel that, you know, corporations see that there's a very big market to make a ton of money. And so they really just sort of want to sit our kids in front of a computer all day long and have the teacher kind of walk around and facilitate what they now call personalized learning. That's not what we call it as educators. You know, personalized learning before computers became, you know, all of that was really the ability for teachers to tailor learning to children, you know, to move them where they needed to be. And it wasn't about sitting in front of a computer all day. It was about interacting face-to-face, whether it was in group work or project learning. So we have really big concerns with the online learning language in this bill, very big concerns.
Yeah, I believe, if I understand you correctly, you know, technology was supposed to be a teaching tool, not the teacher.
Well, technology, listen, it's got a great place in the classroom. I teach in a fully digital school. You know, for example, I teach ESL kids, and I see technology. My iPads are doing amazing things for my ESL kids. It should not replace the teacher. It should supplement what is going on in the classroom, and it opens lots and lots of doors. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that, as we know and we've discussed, you know, it's requiring districts to use money that they don't have. So budgets are really being stretched. It's concerning. You know, online learning shouldn't replace a teacher.
Okay. All right. Denisha, you weighed in a little bit the last segment. I want to give you an opportunity to expand on maybe your earlier thoughts or add some new thoughts based on what Marla's just shared with us.
Yeah, well, I think Marla raised really good concerns, the same we have. There's this big push using technology and things like personalized learning. Also, competency-based instruction is one of the things you're hearing a lot about. So the idea that you students have to prove that they learn through discrete competencies that can be measured in an online system. And so that's also a big push that you hear people talking about, which has a lot of us confused. We all believe, I love technology, I think it's great things, but there are times when I see technology not being used correctly. I was observing a pre-K classroom in a school here in D.C., and there was a group of four kids using iPads for an activity, and I noticed that they didn't know what they were doing. They weren't able, they were just hitting the pad until they got the right answer. So it wasn't like it was really helping them learn, so I think we have to be wary of that, right? Not everyone's going to learn the best that way. And so we have to make sure that we're using technology to support education and not to kind of take over education. The other issue with ESSA that's a big concern to me, because as you know, I teach in the School of Education at Howard University preparing teachers, and there's a lot on teacher prep in this bill that is really frustrating. The Washington Post published an article by a professor named Kenneth Zeichner, who also wrote about his concerns about teacher prep and what's happening. And that this bill basically paves the way for all of these fast-track teacher preparation programs like Teach for America, Relay Graduate School, and the New Teacher Project to get more into the public school system, right? So they've made this language of these new teacher academies, and that they should have, if you go through a teacher academy, then you should be considered as though you earned a master's degree from a traditional university. It's kind of what the language is here. And that's pretty scary, because a lot of these programs don't really look at education in the whole picture, right? Most people understand that teaching is an art, but it's also a science, right? So we learn the science, the pedagogy, the psychology, how do students learn, how do you motivate them, how does culture play into, and then there's the art, you know, the actual day-to-day, getting into a good rhythm with students, joking, having eyes in the back of your head, being able to anticipate problems, right? And so, but a lot of these fast-track programs don't focus on both the art and the science, right? They give teachers these gimmicks for students, these classroom management gimmicks where students are supposed to be constantly repeating and following clapping and signals without the science behind what is good teaching and what good learning looks like. And now this bill allows them to come in and have the same type of, the same type of training, not training, but they're supposed to be in the same level as a teacher who, you know, got a master's degree and invested in both the science and art of teaching. And so I find that very problematic in the ESSA.
Denisha, this is Virginia here. I wanted to ask if there is a local strategy for approaching that the same way as we heard in the first segment about how, since some of the onus of testing has, or teacher evaluation has been shifted to the states, there can be local actions against it. What about this teacher prep aspect?
Yeah, so we're hoping to develop some. I know that Rosalie Friend, who's been on the show before, mm-hmm. who's one of our Save Our Schools represented in New York, did talk about New York is now looking at, there was a meeting on higher ed because they have the EdPPA, which is a Pearson-produced type of teacher performance assessment for pre-service teachers, and it's required to become a teacher in the state of New York that you have to go through EdPPA, which is really, you produce a video and somebody somewhere watches your video and grades you and then determines if you're able to teach, and it's very expensive for students, and some students aren't able to pass it, and so they can't become teachers. And so they feel that with the new ESSA, they should be able to get rid of things like EdTPA. And I think, so the issue is going to be, will that really happen? I think if you heard Jeanette talk, you think you're getting rid of things, but they're just shifting it to a different level. So where I will still be on New York to see if that happens. I think locally, what United Opt Out, one of our members teaches in Colorado, and she sees firsthand the impact of Relay Graduate School. Relay, the fast-track teacher program, sort of like Teach for America. They consider themselves a graduate school, but that's far-fetched. They don't have any type of traditional university things that make one an actual graduate school. And so her school's in a turnaround school, and they've been taken over, and Relay's come in. And she's seeing firsthand these effects, the way they're treating children. And so part of it is we're trying to expose that underlying a lot of this is some racist and classist assumptions, because this is only done to poor children and then poor black and brown children, right? We don't believe that all children learn this way. We only believe that some do. But because they're in a turnaround situation and the school district is threatening to close them, this is what they have to go through to kind of prove that they're okay. So part of what we're working on is a strategy to inform parents about why is Relay Graduate School dangerous? Just so recently, they had a meeting in New York of principals, and so we did a Twitter storm to try and, you know, shed some information on the fact that this is not what real teaching and learning. And again, this is what happens when people who have no understanding of the science of teaching go into the business of education, right? They don't know the theories that, you know, for people who claim to be so behind data-driven instruction is the new term, but they don't use any of the research that we know from traditional places that we've read that have, you know, long talked about the theories of teaching and learning and what good practice looks like and how do we motivate and engage those students who are harder to learn. That's what we use, you know, to develop our programs, but they don't have to use any of that. They can use these anecdotal, what kind of feel-goods message that they think are right, and no one's really questioning is that best for children.
And let me just ask so that I'm really clear on this. Is New York the only state that thinks that filmmaking is equivalent to a graduate degree in teaching, or is this a national thing with the video production?
No, unfortunately, EdTPA is a program, and other states are using. I think Maryland is about going through it. I have a friend who's a teacher at Towson, Professor Towson. I think they're looking at it. So different states have taken on. It came out of Stanford. Linda Darling Hammond had created EdTPA, that it's a performance way to assess teachers, and so on a local level it's not bad, but what happened was to get it out to as many people as possible, they partnered with Pearson. And when you partner with Pearson, Pearson takes over everything. So to me that was the downfall of this assessment, but you know, I've met Linda Darling Hammond several times, we've talked about this, and again, that was the only way to get out the assessment system nationally. But so now you pay Pearson hundreds of dollars to review your video of your student teaching, and then somebody gets paid $75 to then assess that. And so, but you know, traditional universities, we have people who go out and observe our students teach. I might do it a semester. We might have a coordinator for our field experience program go out, but we have people who go out and watch them teach and give them feedback. And also the cooperating teacher also gives them feedback. So we don't really need to see the idea of paying Pearson or paying some stranger to do what something that we've traditionally done. And so that unfortunately is, you know, not all states are using EdTPA, but it's more than just New York.
Okay, I want to turn back to Mahler, and you can weigh in as well, Denisha, but it seems to me that part of the emphasis of ESSA is to return or strengthen state and local control. I think return is a better way to describe it. But so is to me, the question is that a better situation in terms of groups like yours fighting and advocating and trying to affect policy on a local level, or was it you think it was easier on a federal level? What are your thoughts about that, Marla?
Well, I agree. I think it's, you know, it's definitely easier for us to fight it at the state level because I think you have a more personal relationship with your state legislatures. Like, for example, my assemblyman, I'm very close to him. He's a 5-minute walk from my house, and the poor guy probably gets a visit from me like once a week. So I think, you know, I think it's easier because it's on a state level and you have more of a personal relationship with your state lawmakers and they're more accountable to you. You know, the other issue too is that they're also dealing with large activist groups throughout the nation, and these can be just state activist groups. For example, New York BATS, you spoke with Jeanette Bitterman from NYSAPE and Long Island Opt Out today. You know, in New York, we have the very, very strong grassroots activist groups that are smart. We know exactly what's going on. We can, you know, advocate for all kinds of different things. So I feel like I hate to say the good thing is that this now returns the fight to the state, and we can now personalize it and fight it.
So it sounds like that's kind of a paradigm shift in our favor.
Yes. Yeah. I would definitely agree with that. And we see that now happening in New York because of the Governor's Common Core Task Force came down with recommendations. You know, it needs a lot of work, but it's a huge shift. And I think it's a big shift because of ESSA as well.
Denisha, your thoughts?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think there is this shift, you know, as you know, states' rights has always been coded language, so I take it very scary to hear people talk about give it back to the states. We know that we needed Title I and we needed other federal, but the federal government's role in education was to protect states who didn't always value all of their citizens, right? So to protect the people, minorities, low-income people who might fall through the cracks through state government. So that's always been the role, but lately it's been overstepped in different policies. So on some levels in states that have strong activist groups on the ground, we do see hope that maybe they can do a turn at the state level because they can lobby more effectively, as Marla said, and they can put the pressure on, as opposed to when we did lobbying before, we constantly were told it's a federal issue. There's nothing we can do. It's a federal issue. There's nothing we can do. So now they can't say that when we go lobby them next year, right? They can't say, oh, because it's not. It's a state issue. So there is that avenue to put more pressure in the states. But again, if we think that the people behind all this, the profiteers, are just going to sit back and just let us take, you know, they're not. They're going to find a way to keep doing what they're doing at the state level. So we just have to find one way to kind of stay on top of that every step and not think that this isn't a success when it's actually just, it's just a different challenge, but it's still a challenge.
Let me, I want to make sure I get to this before the show is over, because this is what's really important to me. I haven't had a chance to read through the ESSA language, and so I'm hoping that one of you can share a little bit about this. I'm interested to know, is there anything in there that specifically addresses parental engagement from the district or local schools? Is there anything in that act that talks about that?
I'll let Marla answer this, because Marla put together a group and they went through it. They went through every word, so she can speak.
Yep, I did.
I read certain sections, so I haven't read the whole thing. I read the teacher prep section, but I'll let Marla.
Marla?
Yeah, we did. We actually got a committee of five. Yes, there is some good language in here about parental engagement, which is a good thing, because, you know, we haven't really seen that before. You know, but like Denisha said, a lot of it you have to read super careful, because it can be very coded language. There is language that states will have to be making, for example, their own opt-out laws. And so, you know, BATS put together a toolkit, actually, that's on our website at batsteacher.org, because we did read the whole document, that is basically a toolkit for people to fight ESSA at the state level. And one of them is the opt-out language. And the other thing that I think also parents have to be very aware of is the data privacy language as well. So, but it does have really good language about engaging, for example, our ENL and ESL population of parents, also working with special needs parents as well. So it does have some good parent engagement language in it, which is nice.
And that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. And so what role does the U.S. Department of Education play going forward with regard within the context of this new act? Has anybody kind of had that conversation or understand what their role is going to be? Because it seems like to me their role is going to change some.
It will. It's gonna change very drastically. It's defanged a lot of what Duncan did with Race to the Top, what, you know, the Race to the Top initiative did. So the purpose of this, and if you go through this entire 1,000-page document, they must mention at least 40 or 50 times that the U.S. DOE will not mandate any of these programs. So once, again and again and again, it talks about the inability of the U.S. DOE to oversee that. But it does require a lot of documentation to go from the states to the federal government for grant money, as usual, and that they would be reviewing things. So there's still some oversight by the U.S. DOE on certain items. And as Denisha said, though, Thomas, as there should be, because we know that there are states and districts that don't service our most marginalized children, and they need to be watched. I hate to say that, but they do. You know, that's, like, we have to be honest with that. So they do have to play some type of role in it. And the original kind of purpose of ESD, you know, it was to do that. But they've been defanged. They've been defanged, thank God.
Okay, so I guess in some ways that's progress. But I did want to spend a few more minutes on this state situation, because we have already seen that the American Legislative Exchange Council and the Koch brothers, whatever it is, the Progress Institute, they have strong state offices that are designed to get at, you know, Marla, you talked about, you know, your local representative and you can, you know, go knock on his door and he's, you know, probably tired of hearing from you. But
maybe Koch is sending them on golf trips.
But that's the thing, is that they decided decades ago that state legislators were much more likely to be swayed on things like,
right,
you know, let's get rid of Sharia, or, you know, let's put in charter schools or virtual schools or whatever. So have we seen yet that kind of mobilizing going on?
They've already mobilized. I'll guarantee you right now, Denisha will get my back on that. Don't think for a minute that a lot of these profiteers didn't. They've been mobilizing now for 2 months. I guarantee you that. So, you know, we have to really get boots on the ground. You know, we have elections coming up, and we have power of the vote. That's it at the end of the day. But they've already mobilized. I'm sure they mobilized 2-3 months ago, and they've already got their offices in full charge ready to go.
Wow, yeah. I'm sure they have looked at this and decided what's in their best interest in how to proceed with this. And you're absolutely right, Mahler. I just know in my heart that they have a strategy, and we've got to hopefully quickly identify what their strategy is and put in place a counter to their strategy, because this, you know, it's game on now. It's been returned back locally, and so we got to fight tooth and nail against them, because they're going to be coming at us, because they see that the clock may be running out in some situations for them. So it's going to be tough, and so we got to fight hard. Denisha, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with everything, and I you know, Marla, I just want to commend the BATS. I'm so honored to be part of this great organization. They've been working hard to put together a toolkit for fighting ESSA at the state level, and it's on our website. And it's just had a lot of great resources, and so we're going to continue the fight. As Bob George told you on the last bus show, we are planning a coalition event this summer with Save Our Schools. It's the 5-year anniversary of the 2011 rally that brought us all together. So hopefully by this summer we will have, you know, we'll be able to show what all the organizations that have been able to done to make sure that their voices are heard, and that the states, you know, listen to what they're saying, what they know, and treat them as the experts that they are when it comes to public education.
So, Marla, we've got about a minute and a half left. So is there anything that you want to highlight that we may have missed with regard to this new ESSA? Because I know you guys went through it word line by line. So is there anything?
Yeah, there's a lot there. One of the really big things I think that people have to be very mindful of in their states is something called these social impact bonds. What we saw happen, and it's called Pay for Success, where they're allowing Wall Street to invest in programs that supposedly reduce the amount of kids that are going to be tested as special ed. They do these pre-K programs where, for example, Goldman Sachs did one in Utah, and they pushed out this ridiculous research piece at the end of it that totally got debunked. But we have to watch what is called Pay for Success, and we have to watch Wall Street getting involved in special education, especially pre-K special education, using social impact bonds. So districts have to become very mindful of that, because what they're doing is they're trying to reduce the amount of kids that are classified special ed, and then they're getting paid for every kid that is not classified for special ed, which is a travesty. So we got to watch that. Social impact bonds, Pay for Success.
All right. Fantastic. There's so much, and I would... do you have that, the ESSA on your...
it's already on our website.
It's on our website? Mm-hmm. Okay. Virginia's so efficient. She's moving at the speed of light. I can't even keep up with her. So thank you, Virginia. Oh, my goodness. Yes. We're going to have to resume this conversation next month during the bus show, because it's just fascinating. And I'm trying to get into all the little ins and outs of this legislation. I want to thank you, Marla Kilfoyle, for the work that you have been doing and for joining us today. Denisha, I want to thank you as well. Also, Denisha, I saw the video of our work we did together in October. You have to check it out. Folks, that's going to have to do it for today's bus show. This is our last Education Town Hall for the year. I want to wish everyone a happy holidays. Be safe and join us back here the first Thursday in January for our next bus show. Until then, have a wonderful holiday season. For Ron Pinchback, Virginia Spatz, this is your humble servant and host, Thomas Byrd. Peace.
Matzey, founder and CEO of Ethco Electric. We're America's only progressive clean energy company. We support the causes you care about every day when you pay your power bill. And so we think people, when they want to support something good like clean energy, they also don't want to support dirty energy politics. And so we offer a way to get off both dirty energy and get off of dirty energy politics.